The following talk was given to the Catholic Business Network on April 6, 2018, during its monthly First Friday Breakfast Speaker Series. The breakfast was sponsored by Today's Catholic and featured the main presenter, Corey Hyman, CEO and owner of Likeable Art, with his talk titled, How Beauty and Buy-In Will Make or Break Your Team.
You guys are as Catholic as they come. I appreciate the first three rows being empty. So I think we have a problem. And I think it's costing us like millions of dollars and countless productivity. And I've seen it over and over again with everybody I've worked with. I've spent the last 10 years primarily working with ministries and other Catholic business owners. And the problem is that these ministries and people that I'm working with, they're sending out what I call anti-evangelists to their work. And these are ex-employees that are going out after they're done working with that organization and saying, don't work there. That environment wasn't great, you know? And that's a problem. It's a big problem. And so I've seen my work transform into primarily doing video work to now seeing like how do we conquer these problems. And I think the biggest thing is that the employers, that the business owners, that the ministries, that they haven't done a good job of inviting their team into a real story. And I think that's a huge deal. So today I just want to talk about how do we do that? How do we invite our teams into a story, into a quest, right? And so first I want to start with my own story. I was 22 years old, and I pinched all my pennies. It was my senior year of college, and I bought my first camera. And I'd always loved media. I had been doing different things for different organizations that had their own equipment, and finally I wanted to be able to do some things of my own. So kind of every dollar I had went towards this camera. And I had this friend, Tyler, and he also was a photographer and a videographer as well. And so we'd go out and we'd shoot together, and we were learning together, and we were always talking about lenses and whatever else you do whenever you're talking about photography. And he noticed that I was carrying around this this camera with no protection at all. And so he went and he grabbed this, and he said, hey, I've got an extra camera bag. And he gave me this as a gift. And if it wasn't for that, I don't know if I would have that camera. I don't know if I'd have my job, right? Because this ended up protecting it. And so I was very grateful to Tyler for that gift. And so we went on, and eventually I graduated. I went up to Michigan to kind of pursue my girlfriend at the time. Eventually we got engaged and got married. And actually at our marriage, Tyler came, he took some pictures. He went back down to Texas to prep. He was just 2 weeks after our wedding was going to go over to Africa to do some film work in Africa. And so we went on our honeymoon. We came back from the honeymoon, and I'm in my office, just home office, doing some work, working on some projects, wrapping them up after the honeymoon. And I heard my wife gasp, and I ran into the room, and she said, I'm so sorry. And Tyler had been riding his bike to the grocery store. He grabbed some stuff before he was heading over to Africa. And his heart failed, and he passed over, and he died. And I'm in Michigan, broke from a wedding, can't fly down to Texas to go to his funeral. And what do? You hop online, and you try to find everything you can just to soak in those last moments, you know? So I hop on his website, and he said this on his website. He had a quote real big on the right side. He said, if I were to have a mission, I would assume it goes as the following. To present Christ as irresistible to the yearning heart. I'm going to repeat that. If I were to have a mission, I'd assume it goes as the follows. To present Christ is irresistible to the yearning heart. And as I sat there, I decided, Tyler's mission is my mission now. Whatever I do, wherever I go, whatever I decide to do in career or whatever else, my mission is going to be to present Christ as irresistible, as the irresistible self he is. I don't have to make him irresistible. He is irresistible. All I have to do is present him as irresistible to the yearning heart. And so I've kept this bag. I'll never get rid of this bag. I had my wife, she's an artist herself, and I had her letter on it for me. And that's been the decision maker in everything I've done and every step I've taken. And so I share this story with you because I don't let anybody walk into my office to work with me without hearing that story, because I want them to enter into that quest. And so today, I want to know, what quest are you inviting your team into, right? And so a lot of times whenever I'm talking to different ministries and stuff about this, they say, hey, we have this mission statement. We've worked really hard on it. And that's the quest, right? And that's great. Mission is where we always start whenever we're working with organizations, is like, what is your mission? What are you working on? Whatever else. But Donald Miller, maybe you know him. He's an author. And he said this. He said, a mission statement is not enough. It's the tagline of a movie. I think that's interesting. It's your job to then share the whole movie, right? To share the whole story and let them enter into it. Because a mission statement all the time just sits there as a plaque on the wall and never comes in to really affect the way our workplaces are running, right? And I think that's tragic. I think that that's something that we can really do something about. And so how do we do it is the question, right? Well, I think buy-in really comes from giving permission. So I think this is great from Christy Hedges of Forbes. In Forbes magazine, she said this, real buy-in involves at least some element of co-creation. I think that's so great. That's what we're always trying to figure out. How do we do? Like, if we're having a team, how do I really invite you in to create with us, right? And we're makers, we're creators. And I think that buy-in really comes from giving them permission to co-create, right? And I remember talking to someone in an organization whenever I was in college that I really wanted to work for. You know, they were like, oh, that would be a great job. And so he quits and he becomes an anti-evangelist, right? And he calls me up and he says, do not work for them. I won't say to who, and this happened again with a different ministry. Do not work for them. Whatever you do, you've got too much talent. Don't work for them. They'll kill your spirit. Like, how sad is that? Like, that we have all this happening because we never invited people into their story. So I want to get into a little bit of the fact that, like, if we're Catholics that really want to change the culture, right? People are always coming to me like, we want to rock, like, we want to really change culture. We want to shift things. Like, things are, like, going to hell in a handbasket because of this and this and this. And, like, okay, then we have to start by changing our little subcultures, our corporate cultures, our teams, you know? Like, that's where we have to start. Like, if we can't shift that, if we can't, as leaders, shift those little subcultures, then how are we going to shift the entire culture, right? And so, like, I just want to affirm that, like, the leaders in this room can shift culture, and it starts with those little subcultures. So how do we do this, right? How do we invite people into that co-creation? And to tell you the truth, I can't claim to be an expert on running teams. Very small team I'm running. It's like some part-time people and some interns. But what we've decided to do is to really stay small for a minute, to really explore for a second before trying to get too large too fast, because I've just seen too many people do that and fall into these problems. So what we decided to do is we're going to run an apprenticeship program. And so it was about 4 or 5 years ago. We've been doing this for quite a few years. Really, I stumbled into this. I started on accident. After college, I had a couple of jobs. I was like, okay, I'll do this until I have to find a real job, you know? And then I was looking at marrying my wife. I was like, I'll do this until I get married. And then we got married. I was like, well, I got enough work for now. But once I have a kid, I'll get a real job, you know? And then we had a kid. And then we got pregnant with our second. And I was like, oh, this is what I love to do. And I'm working with great people and everything else. And I'm like, but up until this point, I've only cared about the next 2 or 3 months. Like, what does that look like, you know? And my mission had been to find people with missions that I agree with and dive in 100%, you know, and try to push their missions forward. Like, that's what we do, is we're all about, like, how do we actually use the media work we're doing to push your mission forward and not just promote yourself, but actually further a mission. And so at that point, I said, but what's my mission? What do I really care about? And what I realized was what I care about is what does it look like to raise the next generation of artists? I think too often we say, why is beauty gone in the church? You know, we used to be the leaders in the arts and so on and so forth. And the answer to that question is that, well, we haven't given people permission. You know, that same thing. And so people have turned in from artists to button pressers. And I think right now there's so many people in the church that are called to be artists that are currently button pressers. And I think it's very difficult to shift that whole mindset from button pressers to artists. Possible, but difficult. But what I think is very, very possible and very, I think it's going to happen, is raising those next generation of artists that are going to be in those spots to really have an artist mindset and to push for beauty and to be leading with beauty and to be striving for that. So what we've done is that we've concentrated for a minute on an apprenticeship program. So what we do is we bring in people for 3 or 4 months, and they're working with us. We have a curriculum that they're going through and so on and so forth. And the whole goal for me is to learn what people need to learn. Like, that's a big goal. And so what we've really tried to do is to invite people into a co-creation. So I want to go through a couple of things that we do. And it starts with the interview process. So I just finished going through a dozen interviews for our next. We're really just looking for 1 or 2 apprentices. And we went through a dozen interviews to get there. And we haven't hired yet, but they were incredible interviews. And I'll tell you, 2 times in the interview process, that they always pause and they always say, I've never heard that before. And I hope they start hearing it from you. Like, I hope you start asking these questions. The first one is, I want to know, how will this apprenticeship, how will this job not just affect your career, but how will this help you become the person you're supposed to become? Like, that's my first question. And they have to stop and pause and they say, okay, let me think about that, you know? And that answer is really important to me. And the second question at the end of every interview, I say this. I just ask whether we work together or not, because chances are we're not going to, like, just odds. But whether we work together or not, what can I do to help you further what you're trying to do? Like, who do you need to talk to? How do we be church? You know what I mean? That's what I'm asking. How do I be the church? Like, and how do I help you further yourself? Like, who do you need to contact? What email do you need? Like, whatever else it is. And, like, that moment is a moment where they always are like, oh, wow, you care. You know what I mean? Like, and they're bought in. So whoever that intern is going to be asking that question every time, whoever that apprentice is going to be asking that question, they're bought in already. So whenever I say, yes, come, I don't really work with any locals for the most part, because when they move here, they're bought in 100%. You know what I mean? Like, if they're going to move here for 3 or 4 months, this is what they're doing. This is what they care about. And so they're just completely bought in. So this is how we're really working to get buy-in to our mission. And then after that, obviously, on day one when they come in, we have an orientation. And I find this to be really important to that buy-in process. And I say a couple of things that are really important. First, I start with our core values, right? And so in a second, I'll talk about our book. And our book is kind of pivoted around a little bit of our core values, and I found different people to unpack some of these different core values. But it goes a little bit deeper than that. I'll share a little bit in a second. But you'll find all three of these core values in the book in different ways. And the first is lead with beauty, right? And I explain that. And Bishop Barron actually unpacks that in the book. And so he talks about a baseball game and how you don't take a kid and just start sharing all the rules to get them into baseball. You don't say, well, you run through first and then you slide into second and, you know, so on and so forth. Like, a kid's going to be lost. He's going to be gone. What you do is you take him to a game. You get him a hot dog. You let him smell the smell, see the sights, and all of a sudden he's going to see that game and say, I want to do what that guy's doing, you know? And so the same has to go for whatever we're doing, right? We lead with beauty, especially in evangelization. That's kind of the work that we're doing. We lead with beauty, and so we show people first, and we let them sit in that for a second. We start with beauty, we lead to goodness, and we end with truth, right? You can't have any of those without the others, but we always lead with beauty. The second is affirm the good. And so We're always looking. We have a rule that to make any critique on the church or culture, we have to affirm 80% of the time to earn the credibility to critique 20% of the time, right? So we don't earn that credibility until we've really affirmed what is good there, because nobody's going to open their ears until they hear, like, oh, this person kind of sees at least my perspective. And the third is kind of the yin to that yang. It's permission to speak the unspoken, right? And so that is we're always looking at, like, we got to speak to that suffering, that ache that people are feeling, to really understand that, and to really open up, just kind of tear open the heart a little bit to speak the unspoken. So those are our three core values, and I think that's really important that we narrow things down to those three core values for whatever we're doing. And then we have minor core values, which I'll just list off real quick. Our minor are do nots, right? So never attack, never defend, always clarify. We also do no politics, and we do no parody, right? So those are some of our just minor pillars. We have our three majors and our three minors. So if we want to change our cultures, like, we've got to pay attention to these small cultures we're running, and try to figure out, how do we have buy-in? Because if we can be bosses like that, eventually they're going to say, what, like, no matter what you're running, whether you're running a pizza shop or a mechanic, whatever, they're going to say, you care about me. What do you have that I don't? And it will lead back to that. That is the best way to evangelize in our workplace. You know, what is it that you have? Like, in the Bible, it says, always be ready to give an explanation to your hope. And first we have to have hope, right? To be ready. Like, that's like a given. So, like, to share that hope constantly, eventually somebody's going to say, what is it? And you got to be ready for that, ready to give that explanation for your hope. And then I think it's important that we talk about, like, if we only try to fix our problems in our teams and businesses, that's how we create a bloated bureaucracy, right? I think, like, problem solving is really important, so on and so forth. But at some point, we actually have to shift to aiming at truly being the best, right? And so, like, to not just be, oh, we have problems with this, we have problems with that. Like, it always just builds to more and more red tape a lot of times. But whenever we strip that away and say, how do we really be the best team we can be? Like, that's whenever we start generating our best ideas and start being able to think about that. And it makes me think back whenever I was 14, my dad, over the summer, my dad's rule was, you either have a full-time job or your full-time job is getting a full-time job. That was always his quote. And he would say it over and over again, right? So I had a couple of jobs. And then eventually when I was 16, I started waiting tables at a Pizza King in Decatur, Indiana, right? And it was run by just this farm boy who bought a pizza joint, you know? And it's probably the most toxic team I'd been a part of, or even up until today, right? Just the conversations are just things I would never repeat, and just toxic. But I decided I'm going to do my work. I'm going to work as hard as I can, and I'm going to try hard, so on and so forth. And eventually I saw this boss just start to realize, like, oh, that I can hire people that care. Like, even in this kind of low-end jobs, like, I can find people that actually care. And he starts firing managers and hiring new ones. And eventually my sister comes back from college and said, oh, how do you like your job at Pizza King? I was like, actually, it's getting better. And so she goes and applies, and she works there. And then my older brother comes back. He was in Honduras. And he's like, how do you like that job at Pizza King? I was like, it's getting even better. And he applies, and he starts working there. And then my younger brother starts working there, right? And so just slowly I'm seeing this culture change. And it's just intriguing me the way this place would not be open today if it wasn't for his decision to start shifting that culture, right? Because the pizza actually isn't any good. But he made a decision, right? And it shifted. And they're still running a crappy pizza shop. And I think team is so much more important than even the product sometimes, you know? So I just want to talk about, like, for a second, back to this book a little bit. I hesitated to really talk about teams and things of the sort, because I kind of thought, like, who am I to be talking about teams? I don't have a big team or whatever else. But it just felt, whenever I was praying about it, I was like, nope, this is what we have to be talking about. Because buy-in is everything. I really don't know much. I'm not very good at very many things. What I am good at is clarifying a message to be simple and direct and try to speak to people's hearts. That's the only thing I'm good at. And it's the only thing I care about, right? And that is the key to buy-in. And the reason is because whenever we're, whatever you're doing, whatever your business is, you're creating something, right? And so I think it's important to start recognizing when we're creating, we're actually doing the first thing that God did. The first five words of the Bible are, in the beginning, God created. So whenever you're, whatever you're making in your business, whatever you're doing, whatever, even if you're making children, you know, you're sharing in that first thing that God did. And that brings on a lot of responsibility. So it's important, whenever I say that buy-in comes from co-creating, well, first we have to recognize that we're co-creating with God, right? And so that's the stem of this book. I was actually flipping through the Bible, and I opened up to Genesis 1, and I read the first five words anew. In the beginning, God created. And I was like, oh, wow, this is meaningful. This is important. He chose that very specifically to be the first thing he shared, right? And like, I need to like just reflect on that a little bit longer. And I started thinking, if that's God's first five words to us, I want to know, what are my mentors and people I care about, like, what are their first five words for me? Like, especially in creating, like, what are their first five words? So I started asking around, and I started with Peter Kreft and Bishop Barron, which are the first two pages of this book. And they had these reflections that just were kind of blowing my mind and changing the way it worked. And then I went out and I started finding all these people that you've heard of, people you haven't, Christopher West and artists from Disney and DreamWorks and all over the place. And I really thought it was just a side project that I was going to put together a PDF and give it away or something like that. But these reflections were coming back and I was like, this is changing the way I work. This has been really incredible. And so I was like, I really have to pour into this and make this into something. And so the book, there's pages of the book on your table, just individual pages. And then there's books over here to check out and to look at. But the book is the product of that. And so everybody shares their first five words on the left side. And then on the right side, they unpack that for about 200 words. And every page has an art piece that either the artist did or we did or another artist did to go along with that, to be really affirming the beauty of it all and to really be trying to practice what we preach. So that being said, I just wanted to share just real quick our mission video that we put. We're filmmakers, so I thought I would just kind of end this a little bit with a piece that we did to kind of share our heart, what we're trying to do and what we're working on.
There's a reason why dictators move far from the reach of the common man. Why humanity's worst criminals are sentenced to complete darkness. Why propaganda posters are hung up to replace classical paintings. It's because art speaks to man's unquenchable longing. The power to try to suppress beauty. But we are fighting against a culture that is numb, against a system that churns out a manufactured next big thing, against mathematical formulas for musical compositions, against the cliche, the sensational, the scandalous. Beauty, it's worth fighting for. And we are in the trenches. We're not button pressers. We're not waiting for a signal. We are artists, and we're running towards beauty with every shred of energy we have. Because we hear the call, we understand the responsibility, and we take up the mantle. We recognize brokenness, and we see beauty there too. We create because he first created. We're inviting you to join us, because we believe beauty will save the world.
So I really want to just encourage you, whatever you're doing, whatever like team you're working on or working with, like if you're not passionate enough to really believe and buy in yourself, sell the business, whatever else, come to me with that money and we'll find a good place for it. But like to get excited again, to get passionate again, to care enough about your people to really pour into them. Because that's the biggest change we can make. And then we can start. We can just start to really present Christ as irresistible to the yearning heart because your team has yearning hearts. And so it's your job to start to fill that yearning, right? And to, like, make a space for them to, like, recognize that yearning and to pour into it and to recognize it. And so that film right there, that was actually an apprentice of mine who was here for 4 months. And at the end, I gave her this idea for this film, and I said, write it. And she wrote that script. And so it can happen. I believe in buy-in. I believe you can really fill that void, that yearning, with the irresistible Christ. So I just want to end with just if anybody has any questions or anything else. And then also, if you do want a book, we normally sell it for $20. Give whatever you want. Make sure you grab a copy before you go out. If you give money, that's great. If you don't, that's great. Whatever money you will go give will go to this, the stuff we're trying to do for artists. We've got a couple of other things in the works, but like that's what we care the most about. We're also working with ministries, and that's kind of how we pay the bills. And then this stuff is going straight back to that apprenticeship program and some other stuff. And a portion goes to feed some hungry children. They happen to be my hungry children, but... So anything you give is appreciated, but seriously, I want everybody to have a copy, so make sure you grab one no matter what and don't feel bad at all. Any questions at all? Yeah, Joe.
A couple things. One, was that your voice on the...
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole talk. We a year ago, we did our first Catholic Creatives meetup down in Denver, and that was my talk, was just on button pressers, which I think it's the opposite of the artist, right? The artist is pushing for something, they care, they are working to co-create with God, so on and so forth. A button presser is the next papal document that comes out. I can tell you exactly what it's going to look like. It's going to be purple with the same font, you know what I mean? Like, a button presser designed that. An artist would have looked and said, this content needs to go out to these people, and so we need to make it so it'll speak to that yearning, right? And we need to, like, make this beautiful in a way. Like, the next papal document will not be beautiful, and that's sad. That's tragic. You know what I'm saying? Like, it will not speak to the audience it needs to speak to. It's going to speak to the exact same audience we've been speaking to for the last 40 years of doing that same design, right? And that's really sad, and that's what I see the difference between a button presser and an artist. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cindy.
Would it be in lines with we've always done it that way?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's exactly right. We've always done it that way. And eventually, the thing is, I think a lot of those people are artists at heart, right? And I know they are. Everybody's an artist at heart, right? But I even think in their positions, they were an artist. They were working, they were pushing, and they were never given permission. And they tried, and they tried, and now they're done, you know? And now they're like, okay, I think I can raise a family or whatever their reason is, you know, to keep going. I'm going to keep going, but I don't care. You know, like this isn't, they're making those anti-evangelists out of those button pressers, you know? So I've been doing this for almost 10 years, not quite. And so it's kind of crazy to say that, but yeah. And why am I in Fort Wayne? So, like I said, I was up in Michigan, got married to my wife. We were up there and it was one of those situations where it was really obvious that it wasn't the place for us. And so we're like, we need to move somewhere else. Where are we going to go? And in fact, it was a little bit of a toxic diocese. I won't go into that necessarily, but like, it's amazing how that can have an effect on you, and where you just realize like, no, we need to go somewhere fruitful. And I grew up in Decatur. I've really respected this diocese and what's going on here. It was a nice middle ground, about 45 minutes away from my parents, about an hour and a half from her house, and it just worked out well. And honestly, it's funny because my wife and I talk about a lot of things, a lot of future things, and whatever the future holds. But what we keep coming back to is like Fort Wayne's been really great, and it's really fruitful, and it's got a lot going for it. And so that's been it's been a decision we've got a lot of critique about anything and everything, but we're really proud to be in Fort Wayne, and I think it's been a really great community.
One more comment about your 80%.
Yeah.
20%, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I was in the pharmaceutical world for many years as a manager, and I had a manager say to me, give people four compliments, four positives before you give them one critique. And when you said 80-20.
That's exactly it, isn't it? Yeah. It's so true.
Because they know you've got their best interest in
mind. It's so true. And it's, and like, I just hear plenty of people like critiquing social media and whatever else. Like, well, then be the difference. Like, that's always my thing. Then go find something and affirm it. Like, and that's even this book. Like, go find one artist in here and go send them a message saying, like, hey, you're doing great work. I really appreciate it. Just that message will keep somebody going. Like, just affirm something. Go find something that's worth affirming and go affirm it. Like, that's how, I think that's the fastest way to change, because people are being discouraged, you know, and like they're like, that's the fastest way to change things for sure. Yeah, last week TEDx here in Fort Wayne did a talk on wonder. She was asking about TEDx. So last week I gave a TEDx talk on the magic of awe and wonder. And I broke down a little bit of my background and talked about how I kind of eventually lost the arts, not completely, but I walk into a little bit of how magic affected that, how awe and wonder has really affected my life. It was basically where Paul says we rejoice in our sufferings without ever mentioning Paul, and talking about like the light and the darkness. And so TEDx is TED is, Ideas Worth Spreading is their tagline, and so they're a conference that's been going on for about 15 years or so, I think, and so it started as a national conference, and now they have local versions of the conference. And so the whole idea is, what is the 18-minute talk that's the talk of your life, and you share that, and so it's spread, it's all around the world now, and so it's been really fun to see it in this local community as well. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Stephanie.
This talk was a presentation of the Catholic Business Network provided by the Office of Communications in the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend. To be notified of upcoming speakers, sponsoring an event, or simply more information to attend, visit www.todayscatholic.org/CBN.